originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 201, and also to those of you tuning into our website at horseracingradio.net. So a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to some 60 riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you're able to help, please visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight, he was the 2018 Eclipse Award winning apprentice jockey with 120 wins his apprentice year. He finished second in the standings among all jockeys in Maryland and is the son of veteran jockey Steve Hamilton. With 139 wins and over $4 million in earnings, it's a pleasure to introduce jockey Weston Hamilton. Wes, welcome to the show.
Thanks. How's it going?
It is going well, Wes. I have wanted to get you on the show here for quite a while, ever since, of course, I heard about your Eclipse Award. And what an accomplishment that is, Wes. You're the 11th Maryland-based apprentice to take home that award. And you're joining the ranks of Kent DeSormo, Chris McCarron, just to name a few of the legends in our sport. What does that feel like?
Oh, my gosh. Every time someone asks me this, I get almost speechless. It's been such a blessing this whole time I've been working with horses, and this, the coming up of this whole entire thing and winning the Eclipse Award was completely just among all things that I've ever done, the most exciting thing by far, like, that I've ever done. It's just such a great feeling. And it never, I wouldn't say it never gets old. It always excites me just talking about it, because it was just so exciting.
Has it really sunk in yet that you won that?
A little bit. It still feels like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe that I did that. It's such a great accomplishment for me, and it's been a big part of my career so far, and it's hard to take it in, really. But no, it was great. It was so awesome.
Was that always a goal of yours going into your career when you first started out? Did you always have that in the back of your mind?
Yes, I had it in the back of my mind from the start. I honestly didn't think, I mean, I set my goals for that from the start, but I was kind of setting my standards high a little bit from what I thought, and I never thought I'd be here. I never thought I'd win that many races in a year. I mean, not that that's a lot. I mean, I still got a lot of work to do. I'm just, it was just amazing. I can't even, it's the best experience ever.
Let's talk about the award ceremony. Was your family there for that? And tell us about, you know, when they actually announced it.
Well, I had about 20 people that went with me. We had got two tables right there in the corner, and we had a big view of the whole thing, and it was basically all my family. There was a few just family friends there, but people in our family, I mean, if they're friends, they're basically like family to us because we're so close to the people we're with. So I had my grandparents from my dad's side. And, well, each grandparent, my mom's side and my dad's side, split up and remarried, so I literally have 8 grandparents.
Wow.
And so they were all there. And I had 3 uncles on my mom's side, their girlfriends, and my dad's brother, my uncle, my mom and dad, a couple friends. Like, there was a bunch of people with us, and my agent and his wife. And, so we were all enjoying the dinner and stuff, and I was nervous the whole time. I was pretty nervous, and I kept getting more nervous and nervous and nervous the closer it got to where they were going to announce the Eclipse Award for the apprentice jockey. And I was just looking at all my family. They were all having such a good time, and I was like literally shaking, nervous of just excitement and like. I didn't know if I was going to win or if someone was going to beat me. It was just really nerve-wracking. And when they called my name, my heart just, like, went straight to my throat. It was like a jolt of lightning hit me. It was really exciting. It was such a good feeling. Like, it was a big relief from the nervousness. But it was also, like, I was still nervous because I had to go up there and talk. But, I mean, I didn't really have a hard time with that. I wrote a few things down on the card that I brought up there, and I had glanced at it like once, and then I didn't even look at it again because I just started rambling.
Did they start playing music to get you off stage or not?
No, I kind of ended it just in time. It was like perfect.
I loved it. Wes. And what a group of a great support system you had there with you. For the award ceremony, has that been important to you throughout your career? Has your family always supported you?
Oh, yeah. I have so much family. I have, like, probably one of the biggest families that you can ever see or ever known. Like, I have so much family. I got family in all kinds of different states. So I always have family supporting me. Every one of them always call me or shoot me a text or message me on Facebook or whatever. Of just supporting me and telling me they love me and how much they miss me and stuff. And I really appreciate them because, I mean, they made me who I am. Being with them my whole life, they're really good people, all of them. And I love all of them so much, and I'm happy to have them by my side supporting me through all of this because they're there 100%. They're the best.
When they announced that you were the winner of the Eclipse Award winning apprentice jockey, did you think you were probably going to win, or did you really have no idea? I know I saw the number of votes, and you won easy winner for you because you had a large number of votes. So
yeah, I didn't know, like, I didn't see the votes before they announced. Like, I didn't know who voted on who. Like, I don't know if that was out or what, but I really had no clue. All I knew was I had more wins, but less in purse earnings. I knew Edgar Morales had more in purse earnings and was like, he was leading Jock at Churchill there for a while. So I was like really nervous about that. So yeah. It was kind of 50-50. I was leaning on, I got it. And then I was also leaning on, oh man, I don't know if I do or not.
Yeah, you were nominated along with, like you mentioned, Edgar Morales and Raylu Gutierrez. But you were the winner, Wes, and what was it like leaving the award ceremony and then going back home to Maryland, the champion? That had to be a great feeling.
Oh, that was such a good feeling. Oh, my gosh. It was like we were thinking about staying there for the Pegasus, And I swear, it was like I won the freaking Pegasus. That's the feeling. I mean, I wouldn't know that feeling. I haven't won that. But, like, that's what I felt like it was like because I was so excited. And when I got back, everybody here was just rooting for me. I mean, I got on, like, 10 or 11 horses the first day back in the morning. Every horse I got on when I came around the track or was just jogging the wrong way or whatever, everybody was just, congrats, congrats, good job. And I was just, I couldn't, my face hurt. I was smiling so freaking hard.
That's what it feels like to be on top of the world, Wes. Love it. And let's take a minute now. You mentioned your family being so supportive, and I'm sure that your father, veteran jockey Steve Hamilton, is probably the most supportive of you. And talk about your dad a little bit. I know he has over 1,400 wins himself. He actually rode in the Preakness a number of years ago. And I know he had a really bad injury. Is he doing okay, and does he plan on coming back?
Yeah, he's doing pretty good. Right now, he's just doing physical therapy for now. He hasn't been released yet. I'm actually not 100% sure what he's going to do yet. He's been talking about coming back all the time, and he got in the jocks room the other day and was just sitting in the box getting back down because he's been off for quite a while now. So he obviously gained a little bit of weight, but like that's not no big deal for him. He's always been able to get down and with ease and just and maintain it, but. He's been talking about it, and then he's cutting weight and getting ready and just getting back in the rhythm. And then other days he's like, you know, I don't know if I want to or not. Like, I'm not sure what he's going to do. It's just going to be like a spare of the moment thing because, I mean, whenever he gets released, he's definitely going to make a decision. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he's going to or not. I know he wants to because he loves racing just like me. I mean. He loves the horses, and he's here in Maryland. I'm not sure what he's going to do, though. I mean, either way, I'm going to support him like he supports me for racing and as his son, so.
Yeah, he actually rode in Maryland for a while. He took two breaks from his riding career in the past, and that's actually, you were born in Maryland, but then Steve moved to Oklahoma, and that's really where you grew up then. Is that right, Wes?
In Oklahoma, yes, ma'am.
And what was it like growing up in Oklahoma, and, you know, what did you do? Other than going to school, were you working around horses during that time?
I mean, I had friends that had horses, and we always, my dad, when he stopped there for a while, for, I guess, 10 years, I guess, when we were in Oklahoma, he was shoeing horses, so I was always going with him to jobs and help holding horses for him and while he shoed them and or shot them. And I mean, I was around horses for a long time. I just had never really ridden a whole lot. Being back in Oklahoma, I love Oklahoma. It's like the most peaceful place on earth. It is like. I love being out in the woods and just being out in the country. You can drive down the road out there, and the only car you're ever going to see on the road is, I mean, your car. I mean, you got no one behind you, no one in front of you, and you're never in a rush. If you got to do something, you leave 20 minutes early and drive 20 miles an hour down the road where you never see one person. I mean, it's really relaxing out there. I used to do a lot of hunting and fishing, camping. Me and a couple of my buddies, we'd go to the Illinois River or one of the lakes and just camp out and fish all day and jump off cliffs and stuff. So it was real cool. I went to school with them guys, and we did a whole lot of sports together, weightlifting, basketball, football. We did all kinds of stuff, but we were out there in the country. That's all we did, basically. Whenever we had free time, we were – boom, we're out there fishing.
It sounds like a great way to grow up. And you mentioned your dad had a business shoeing horses. Were you very familiar with his previous riding career growing up?
Yeah, I was I was pretty familiar with it. He actually has old tapes of when he used to ride. He's got a bunch of them. My uncle made for him a while back when he was off for 10 years. He gave them to him, and I had watched those a lot and watched quite a bit of those and seen just like his style of riding, because I didn't really know when I was real little, when I was in Maryland, when I was born in like up until like fourth or fifth grade when we left, I didn't know I didn't know anything about racing really. Like, I couldn't look at a race and see where Dad was. Like, I wasn't smart at all about racing, so like, I wasn't too familiar with it then, but definitely when I was in high school and watching those and being around Dad more and with the shoeing business and all, I was definitely familiar with what he's done in the past.
And how did you educate yourself on racing? Just picking your dad's brain, or did you start watching races live or on TV?
I mean, both. It goes both ways. I learned a lot from my dad. He's, even if I'm not picking his brain, he's always trying to teach me something, which is a plus. He's a great teacher for any kind of anything with horses. I mean, Western, like going out in the country and riding a horse Western saddle, and he can teach you all kinds of stuff. Just, it's not all on the racetrack. Just getting to know your horse, and he's a really good teacher about things like that. So, yeah, I picked his brain quite a bit, and I watched quite a few races on TV. I would always watch live racing and watch replays of Dad, and looking at him and how he set up a good trip in a race.
So who came up with the idea first? Was it you to start, you decided you wanted to become a jockey, or was it your dad deciding to make a comeback? Which happened first?
It was definitely me. I definitely said I wanted to ride and be a jock. And then about that time when I went to the farm in Carolina, Dad, he was already set on coming back, because I had motivated him a little bit. And he was like, heck, he's going to ride. I want to come back now, because he just missed it, you know? And so we started running, like, every day. We were getting real fit. We were running 5-6 miles a day, going to the gym. We'd do it all together every single day. We were motivating each other. So, like, it's a lot easier when you got someone next to you pushing you than when you're just by yourself running 6 miles, you know?
I read
it. If I ever got lazy or something, he'd be like, come on, let's go. Like, 5 miles through a 6 mile run, I start slowing down a little bit, and he's picking it up, and he's, come on, pushing me. And I do the same for him. So it was easy to get fit quick and get ready to rock and roll.
I read he had to lose 25 pounds to make his comeback.
Yes, ma'am.
That's a drastic weight loss there, but you were both dedicated. Did you have to cut weight? Did you have to worry about that?
Definitely. When I had it in my mind that I wanted to go to the farm and stuff and start riding and I wanted to be a jock, I weighed probably around 126, 127, and got down to enough weight to do a 10-pound bog. I weighed 106, 107.
How do you do that? Is it a combination of running and diet? And if so, what do you eat on a regular basis?
Now I have a way different diet than when I had the bug. The main thing is getting down to it. Once you get down to it, I mean, it's different for everybody, really. Some people say it's harder to maintain it. Some people say it's harder to get down. I think it's harder. I don't know, honestly. It goes both ways. But the main thing I did was I stayed running, stayed active 24/7. Like, I had to, because, and I wouldn't eat a whole lot when I was first trying to get down from 127, 26 to 110 or so, just getting down. I wouldn't eat a whole lot. I would eat salads and, like, salad with a little bit of fish on that or tuna. Mainly salads for, like, I eat, like, a big dinner, and that was it. I wouldn't eat breakfast, wouldn't eat lunch. And I'd be running 4 or 5 miles during that time period, or working, or building fence, or doing whatever out there in Oklahoma, just keeping my mind off of going and sitting in the house and eating and watching TV, so I had to do something. And then I'd eat, like, a big dinner at the end of the day. I'd eat, like, a real big salad with a big fillet of fish on it and vegetables and stuff like that, but mainly one time a day. So it was kind of rough. It was kind of hard to get down, but I wanted to do it, and so I did it. I mean, anybody can do it. If you want it, you can do it.
Wes, let's talk about that's one of the major challenges jockeys have to face. Let's talk about the other. That's injuries, and your dad's very familiar with that. Were you at all worried going into it, knowing what your dad had to deal with in the past?
Honestly, I wasn't worried at all. I try not to keep it in my head at all, because if it happens, it's going to happen. But, I mean, I pray every day that it doesn't, and that if it does, that it's not that bad and I can keep riding, or I can still walk. I mean, anything can happen in a race. But, I try not to think about it ever, like, at any time, because if you got that in the back of your mind while you're racing, you're not confident and I mean, to me, if I have that in my mind while I'm in a race or something, or even any time during the same day that I have a race, that I would kind of be a little worried, and I wouldn't ride as hard. But me, I don't think about it at all, and I ride every horse as hard as I can. I don't think about it. I mean, I've had a couple pretty good little spills, and thank God I jumped right back up and was ready to ride the next race. But I try not to think about it too much, so I don't think about it at all. I don't worry about it.
Yeah, you were riding in that race. I think it was Aqueduct. There was a two-horse spill, and I was watching the race, and I'd been following your career, given that I rode in Maryland too, and I just remembered, you know, the fear. Oh gosh, is that Wes? But I think it was Jose Lizcano had to go to the hospital. He broke something. But did that shake you up at all, seeing that dramatic of a spill?
Honestly, yes. That was pretty nerve wracking. That was a bad deal. I saw the horse break down on the outside, and Jose came off, and that was rough. I thought the horse was going to keep going to the outside, and then it started coming towards me, and I started easing up, taking a little hold, and I was like, all right, what's he going to do? And then he just comes straight over, and there was nothing I could have done. I was pulling my horse back as hard as I could. I was standing straight up on it, but yeah, that was a little rough. I ran off the racetrack. I didn't let the ambulance pick me up. I took off, right off the racetrack. I was making sure I was good. I didn't want people like, oh, are you okay? Are you okay? I just kind of needed to see myself, like, am I good or not? Like, and I was good, so I just kept going. And thank God Jose is all right. He only broke a nose. It looked way worse.
Well, you had another good experience in New York. We'll talk about later in the show. Joggy Weston Hamilton joining me tonight on Jog Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Wes, you talked about your dad sending you to this farm, and I'm very familiar with Hamilton Smith, a Maryland-based trainer. I guess you went to study under his brother.
Yes, ma'am.
What was that experience like?
It was a steady day, just on the grind. I mean, working, and learning your craft. I mean, I was there getting on 12, 13, anywhere from like 8 or 9 to 15, 16 horses every single day from 7 in the morning till noon, because we all went out in like really big sets and would take our time with the babies, you know, and we'd go to the gate every single day, and they come out of there ready to rock and roll. I mean, so we were getting the horses right and doing the best by them. And we'd turn them out, clean stalls all evening and do savings. And we were out there working every day. And when you got a job like that, you're going to learn quick. I mean, I've definitely learned so much out there. I've been dropped 100 times out there with a horse that slammed on the brakes and started bonking on the track. Anything. You see everything at the farm. They've done it. I mean, come out of the gate bucking. Don't come out of the gate and flip. All kind of stuff. I mean, you see everything out there, so you know what they expect. So you learn quick when you come off one. You don't want to come off another one, so you see what went wrong there, and you got other good riders right next to you telling you should have done this or that, and just kind of in your head that you got to get better, you know? So, I mean, I feel like I learn pretty quick. I catch on to things quick, so, and I keep an open mind about it. So I learned pretty quick from Mr. Gorey and all their help out there. They're really good guys, really good spot to be.
Were you pretty green when you arrived there at the training center? Had you had a lot of riding experience?
I didn't have like a lot of riding experience, but I mean, I had been on horses before, just not no clue about a racetrack. Like, I was never in racing tack or exercise saddle or anything like that. I was always in a western saddle or trail riding and just working through a field and stuff like that. And, I mean, I feel like my playing sports had a lot to do with my athleticism for racing. I mean, I played just about every sport there is besides, like, golf and tennis. I did, like, lacrosse, football, basketball, wrestling. I won state in wrestling, actually, and won state in powerlifting when I was in high school. I did cross-country, track. I did everything, and I was good at most of them. I mean, I was good at it all. And, I mean, I had the mindset just to keep getting better at whatever I was doing. So I made myself get better. I had the willingness to, so.
Folks, we will continue our visit with Jockey Weston Hamilton after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judges' choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accepts the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanently Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use their monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Pena of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcott. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too, and I thank you.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Tie ball on the outside. Come Sundown on the inside. Smithwick Spice, those three across the track. Come Sundown is holding on gamely, trying to drive on by. Smithwick Spice on the outside. Tie ball has flattened out. It's Come Sundown and Smithwick Spice on the outside. Come Sundown holding on gamely. Come Sundown will not be denied. Smithwick Spice getting second, followed by Tie ball and Sapphire Shilling.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigle, and I am joined this evening by jockey Weston Hamilton. Wes, we just heard the replay of your very first stakes victory at Delaware Park on September 29th of last year in the first state dash stakes aboard Come Sundown. And what does that bring back? What kind of memories hearing that replay?
Oh, I used to love that horse. That was like my favorite horse at that time. That horse was such a Cadillac. He would do it, whatever you wanted. You could put him in the front or put him right off the pace, and he'd relax, and he'd give you everything you got right when you asked him. I mean, he was a really nice horse. That brings back some good memories, being at Delaware with all the jocks down there and having a good time over there. It's fun being over there, and it's warm weather, so when we're racing at Delaware. So that brings back some good memories. I'm ready for some warm weather.
Can't blame you there, Wes. I remember all too well riding at Penn National in the last race in January. It's a little bit chilly. Charlestown at night, oof, a little bit chilly. But let's go back, Wes. We were talking before the break about your time at the Ellery Training Center, studying under Hamilton Smith's brother. And what kind of teacher was he? Was he pretty strict? And what did you learn from him?
I mean, he was kind of strict as a boss. He wasn't really like just there, just teaching you like do this, do that, do this, do that. He was watching over what I was doing, like in the mornings galloping and company, and he'd tell me, do this. You need to try keeping your feet more forward or putting your hands down harder, or just correcting me on things I was doing wrong, because I was pretty green, but just things like that. And he's a really good horseman, Mr. Gory Smith. He's one of the best. He's a great guy. He's one of the best people I know. He's such a good guy. He's taught me so much. He taught me everything. I mean, when I was breaking horses out of the gate down there for the first time, when we'd break and I'd break all in their mouth and they'd be trying to buck, and I looked like crap. So he definitely helped me a lot. He taught me a lot of things. Basically, I mean, everything I know. I started down there and I didn't know hardly anything. I mean, he taught me good horsemanship and taught me the roots and the ways. So I mean, All props to Mr. Gory Smith. He's one of the best.
How long did you stay there, and when did you know you were ready to start riding races?
Well, I was, what'd you say? When was I down there?
How long did you stay there?
I stayed there for approximately 10 months, 9 or 10 months. I was supposed to stay there for a full year. But actually, one morning I woke up and I was getting ready to go to work, and right when my eyes opened, I felt this pain in my stomach. And I was just like, oh man, it was like the worst pain I've ever had in my life. Like, it hurt so bad. And I couldn't get out of bed. I just laid there and I was throwing up and all kinds of stuff. And so I called my valet. His name's Bobo. His son works at the farm down there, so I called him because he was one of my buddies. So I called him. I said, man, I can't get out of bed, man. My stomach, oh. And he came and picked me up. And we called the boss, Mr. Gore. We called him and told him couldn't make it to work. So I told him, drive me to the urgent care. And he was going to drive me to the urgent care. We're on our way. And thank God that he had in his mind, heck no, we're not going to urgent care. He whipped a U-turn. We turned around, hauled butt to the stinking hospital. And thank God, because I had a ruptured appendix. Mm. And it was about to burst, and it was leaking, and it was ruptured. So I have went in there, and I had emergency surgery and got that removed.
Jeez.
And I came straight to Maryland to my parents' house right when I got out of the hospital down there. They didn't even know I was in the hospital. I didn't have my phone. I was there for a day. They got there right the day that I needed the surgery, and they were there for it, and they drove me back to Maryland. So I was only down there for, I was 2 months short of when I was supposed to be down there for, I mean, I could have been there for another year. I could have stayed as long as I want. Mr. Gorey, he welcomes all the help for as long as they want. So, I mean, whenever I was ready, I was ready. I mean, I could have stayed for another year. I had it in my mind that I was going to stay a little longer until I got the surgery, and then I came here. And right when I got better, I started galloping horses here.
I mean, how long did you gallop horses before you started riding races then?
I started galloping, and I was probably, I galloped horses for Hammy, actually, Hammy Smith. And I probably worked there for two or three months. And then I got on horses for Lacey Gaudette. I was galloping over there, and then I was galloping for a couple other people, and then I started freelancing on my own. And then I was like, all right, enough galloping. We got to start breeding, man. I breeze at the farm, and I'm not breeding any horses down here. I'm ready to breed some. So I started going around to every barn, telling the trainers, meeting the trainers, and introducing myself. And, told him I was trying to get some more breezes under my belt because I was going to start my buck pretty soon. So I started getting on a bunch of breezers and winding up my own works in the morning, being my own agent, just going out there and freelancing. And I did that for, I'm not sure how long I did that, honestly.
You rode in a few.
I didn't do it for too long. I didn't do it for that long. I started. I didn't do it for too long.
And then you rode in a few amateur races, actually, the three of those, I believe, and you won one of those. What was that experience like with those amateur races?
Oh, man, that was awesome. That was great. I won my first amateur race at Parks. I went to Parks, and everybody at Laurel told me, don't go on the rail. The rail is so deep up there and this and that, and the rail's dead. They won't run on the rail, get in the outside. So I had it in my mind, get off the rail. I rode up there with a guy named Vincent Bricelli. I call him Jimbo. Vincent Bricelli, he's one of the best. He taught me quite a bit, too. He was a really good rider. He rode Ruffian and a ton of other horses that come down the line. So he rode up there with me, and we were talking crap the whole way and just having a good time. And when I won the race, I went straight to the rail, And that was the best shot I had. Cause I mean, in my mind, I mean, technically the rail is the fastest rail on the track, but from where I was in the race, I had to stay on the rail. It was the best way. It was the best trip for me. And it was open. I made the lead going through the turn and kept going. Luckily, it was awesome. It was a great feeling.
I got to say, a really quick side note, you mentioned Jimbo Bricelli. We actually had Jimbo on the show, I don't know, 6 months or so ago, maybe a year ago. And folks, listen to the replay at www.horseracingradio.com. .net. You can check out that show with Jimbo. Like you said, Wes, he rode Ruffian. He has a pretty cool story. So it was a fun hour we spent with him. Now, you rode a couple amateur races, and then you actually won your first race. I think it was your fifth mount on a horse by the name of I Just Want to Win. What a fitting name. What was that first official win like?
Oh, it was great because I was in the race with Dad, and me and Dad were sitting pretty much right next to each other. I was on his inside, and he was on the outside. We were like the 4 and the 5 or the 3 and the 4 or something like that, and we're off the pace coming around the turn. We're probably 7 or 8, probably farther than that. We were probably 8 or 9 lengths off the front, and the head of the lane came around, and I was still inside of him, and I had a little bit of horse, and I asked my horse a little bit, and he started running, and his horse was becoming me, so I started angling out, and I looked, and Dad's right there on the outside, and he was riding, and he didn't have as much horse as me, but he yelled to me. I looked at him, and he screams. He says, "Go on with him, Wes!" He screamed. It sounded like he was right in my ear. He was a couple horse lengths away from me, but it sounded like he was right in my ear, and it was just such an adrenaline rush, and I just started riding as hard as I could, and that was such a good feeling to have Dad in the race, and he yelled to me, and I won. That was such a good feeling.
So, Wes, on December 11th of 2017, your career officially started, and that was perfect timing to have the full year with your bug. Obviously paid off. You were the Eclipse Award-winning apprentice jockey of 2018, like we mentioned during the first part of the show. And so take us through the year. We'll talk about that, but who did you have as an agent?
I had Paul Plymire as an agent. He was a really good agent. He has, right now, he is J.D. Acosta, and I'm pretty sure he just took Angel Cruz's book back from, he came back from California. He was a really good agent. He works real hard, and he's got some good business behind him.
Is he still your agent?
No, I made a change, and right now I have Simon Purdy. He was my dad's agent way back when Dad had the, it was right when Dad lost the bug. Simon took his book, I think. So he's a real good guy. I took him out of retirement.
So Wes, when you were working with Paul and right after that first winter, did you find that success came pretty quickly to you?
Oh yeah, definitely. We have been working hard since day one. I mean, me and Paul, we were seeing everybody at the track every morning, getting on horses for everybody and just making sure everyone knew we were at the track when we were there. We weren't just getting on for one person, and we were seeing everybody and getting a lot of mounts. So it came pretty quick. We started doing pretty good quick, and then we started riding for some really good trainers. And, yeah, it came pretty quick.
Speaking of riding for some really good trainers, someone who you have a lot of your business with, Dale Capuano, who you won that stake we just had the replay of during the break. Come Sundown, Dale trained that horse. Also, horse by the name of Timeless Curls, who you won the $100,000 Nellie Moore Stakes just a couple weeks ago, January 12th of this year. And having that connection with Dale, he has a lot of good horses. What's it like riding for him?
Oh, it's great to ride for Dale. He's a really good guy. He always tells me instructions on what he would like in the race. And on top of that, I know the horse so well. Every horse that I ride for him, I know like the back of my hand because I get on them in the morning. Pretty much at least 4 or 5 days a week, I'm at his barn first thing in the morning getting on horses. And so I know every horse I ride for him like the back of my hand. So going into the race, I know what the horse likes. I know how to get him to relax, and I know him pretty good. So when Dale gives me the instructions, it works out perfect. And if something were to happen in the race, like someone was gunning, and I would sit right off the pace instead of trying to make the lead if that's what he wanted me to do. And it always works out pretty good. So we click. We got a good deal going now. Hopefully it can keep rolling.
You rode a horse for Dale at Belmont Park on September 19th. Dale actually considers this one of your best rides. You were aboard a first-time starter, Strive for a Curve, and you came from off the pace. And describe the race and what it's like riding a first-time starter?
Well, Dale always has the first-timers ready to roll. They are sharp and on their toes every time they go to the track, the first-timers. I mean, all of them. He always got the horses ready to roll, but the first-timers always run, it seems like, a lot better than other people's first-timers. He's just he gets them going really good in the mornings. I mean, we got a good set of hands at the barn, the exercise riders, and Dale always lines it up perfect where horses are going in company with other horses that they match up perfect with, so they're getting the best out of it in the morning. And so going into that race, that horse was on fire. That horse was ready to run. He was just so sharp. And honestly, I had been working him out of the gate, and he was like flying out of the gate. So I was expecting to break and be close on top, like on the lead, but he broke like half a step slow, and he was just really relaxed running back there. So I just kept him there, and I knew we had a lot of horse. Right when I asked him a little bit, he just pulled my arms right out of my body, just started bringing me. So I instantly got in a relax again because I didn't want to blow his load early. And then when the head of the lane came around, I was coming around and I snuck through on the rail and had a ton of horse. Right when I asked him, he just took off into a different gear and he was rolling. And I got bumped around a little bit coming up the rail. I don't know what jock it was that was on the lead, but he had his stick cocked down. He didn't have it cocked up, so he didn't think we were coming, and he looked over, and we were rolling, and he tried to fight us off, but that horse is just made of steel. That horse is – he'll run right through anything. He's got a lot of class. He's a real nice horse.
And riding a first-timer like that, obviously you have to have your wits about you. You don't know what they might be doing. Do you just kind of try to get them to relax first time out?
I mean, it's different. For me, it's different for everybody. I mean, some people I'll ride for want their horse to just get a good race under them and not just try to go all out and just beat the heck out of them and this and that. They just want me to just get a good race under them, let them run good, so I'll finish on them good and they'll run real good. And other people want their horses to obviously win. I mean, everyone wants to win, but Dale's horses, I'd been on him in the morning 100 times, so I knew he wasn't going to do anything out of the ordinary. He was because I had worked him with two horses in between horses, coming from off the pace works, and he just knows what he's doing. So I wasn't too nervous about it. I was pretty relaxed, and on a first timer, when they relax, that's the main thing, is because when you save it for the end is the biggest thing. Because once you get one of them, when Adele's first timer's rolling, they don't stop. They keep going. So you got to make sure you got your dead aim on what you're going for, and go on with them when you ask them, because they're going to give you everything they got.
Let's talk about your schedule, your daily schedule. I know you like to keep very busy and put yourself out there in the mornings ready to take care of any kind, you know, gallop horses, breeze horses, whatever it is you're doing. Also, one of the positive things of riding in Maryland is you have so many different racetracks close in proximity. You can travel a lot to ride different places. So what's your daily schedule like?
Well, this morning, me and my agent, we actually went to Fair Hill and saw Graham Motion, got on two horses for him, and saw Mark Schumann, went to Trombetta's barn, we went and saw Chucky Lawrence, we went everywhere. We went up there and made some rounds, and they were all happy to see us down there, and we're going to start going there a couple times a week, once a week. So that's good, getting out there. They got really nice horses down there. They're good folks too. And having all the tracks to race at, it's so nice. I mean, in Pimlico also. Pimlico, There's a lot of good horses there. We go to Pimlico almost every morning. When we get done at Laurel, even if the track's closed at Pimlico, if we're busy at Laurel, when we get done, it's kind of late. We'll still go to Pimlico because there's trainers still there, and we'll just go. I mean, we have a really good relationship with our trainers, me and my agent, Simon.
I got to tell you, West Maryland was my favorite place to ride consistently. I traveled a lot and have a few different favorite racetracks, but Maryland is such a good place to ride. The horsemen are great. You have a lot of good people there. Do you plan on staying in Maryland long term, or are there future goals maybe of going to New York?
Honestly, right now, I'm not sure. I'm just kind of going with the flow. Maryland's my favorite track right now. I love Laurel. I love Laurel Racetrack. I'm ready for Delaware to open so I can get down there some. I won quite a bit of races up there last year. So right now my plan is to stay at Maryland, but maybe one day in the near future, if I got the opportunity to go somewhere, I might take it. But right now I got a ton of business at Laurel and Pimlico, and I'm getting business now at Fair Hill, so I'm staying for now.
How would you describe your riding style? Obviously, some riders are known as speed riders, or they're a turf rider, or you know, they're known for what they win a lot. And so, how would you describe your own personal riding style?
I'm pretty patient. I like to see the horses finish really well towards the end and not hit a wall during the stretch. I like to give them the best shot they got to win. So I like to come from right off the pace. I mean, sometimes even more than that, I like to come from right off the pace. If it's kind of far back or real close, but right off of them, either way, I like running at something. Unless the horse brings me to the lead. I mean, That's my main style. I like to ride from just coming from off the pace. But if a trainer tells me to gun to the front, I dang sure will. I'll jack one out of there. I mean, but if I get on the lead, I'll sit on them. I won't just send them the whole. I mean, that's no good if you just send one the whole way. That's not how you win. But if they bring you to the front, that's definitely a good spot to be too. But if you're in the front, you want them to relax and be just chilling up there. You don't want to be gunning them, because then they're not going to finish well. Unless it's short distance and you have a ton of speed on with your horse, I mean, that's a different story. But any other race, then it's, I mean, I'm coming from right off of it.
Do you still look to your dad for advice? Do you still watch replays and ask him to maybe pick out certain things that you could improve on?
I don't ask him so much as much as I used to. We watch replay. I mean, he always goes to the racetrack, so he'll be in the jock's room. And if I do something, if I mess up on something or do something I shouldn't have, he'll instantly just boom, and he'll be right there and just, dude, you should have done this. And I should have. And it's kind of like, he's always right there with me, giving me advice right then when it happens. That's the best. I mean, and we'll watch replays together, and he'll say, dude, you might have been able to win if you did this. And I'll listen to him and try it the next time if something happens the same way. And do what my dad would have done and what he said, and boom, now the horse ran second and not fourth, or it jumps up and wins. He's a smart rider, and he's really smart. He's been in it for way longer than me, so I listen to everything he's got to say.
What's the biggest piece of advice he ever gave you?
Biggest piece of advice he's ever gave me? I'd probably say it's advice towards work ethic, because me and my dad are both very hard workers, and he told me from the very start, you're in it, you got to make hay while the sun shines. So he told me, when you're doing good, when you're doing bad, you got to work hard. And when you're doing good, you got to work harder. And that's really good. And I live by that from working. I mean, in anything, not even in racing. I mean, if you're doing good, if you're doing not that great, you got to work hard to make it up. And if you're doing good, you got to work harder, because that's when you're doing good. You got to make sure you keep doing good.
I love that, Wes. We only have a couple minutes left here. Maryland's a little bit different than Oklahoma, and maybe not as many opportunities to go hunting or fishing, but in your free time, it doesn't sound like you have a lot, but what do you do for fun?
Right now, I mean, I play guitar at least a couple hours a day. Instead of going home and watching TV, if I'm sitting at the house, I'll play guitar. Like, I love guitar. So, I mean, I play guitar. I'll go hang with family, and we'll go do fun things. Like, we used to snowboard a lot and stuff like that. But when it's warmer, we'll go. We do some of the same stuff. I mean, we ride four-wheelers out in the woods, and we'll go out in the country here and ride horses and trail ride. I mean, there's plenty of spots for that, and I know a lot of good fishing spots around here too, but I'm always doing stuff. Anything that sounds fun, I'm ready. I'm pretty open to going and doing things, and if it's not something fun like that, I'm doing working. I mean, me and Dad chopping wood for the wood stove. Chop wood don't just sit there and get chopped itself, so we'll go and chop a bunch of wood and do all kinds of stuff. We go fishing, we'll go canoeing down the river. Heck, what else do we do? All kinds of stuff.
Well, Wes, we are all out of time. Sounds like you have fun on top of working really hard too. That's what it sounds like. And I can't thank you enough. This has been such a pleasure spending the last hour with you, Wes. You got to do me a favor. You got to say hello to your valet, Bobo. My old valet was Javier, so go say hi to them. And Frank, the clerk of scales. Tell everyone I said hello. Can't wish you the best of luck. Can't thank you enough.
I sure will tell them. And thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be on here.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thanks for listening.